this time and continue.
Okay, so I think the quickest thing we'll do is just hit the bullet points of it as much for the audience, and then if you have, then we'll hear from them and then we can debate more if you have any call. And Bill's going to show you the little map there when we get to the boundaries, when we get to that section. So basically, if you want to jump to page 2 in your ordinance.
Everybody get a copy? They want one.
Thank you. Go to page 2. We'll just start off at item 4. The rest is definitions. A business license is required. That's one of the things we're requiring. They must comply with all the following, you know, federal, state, and local laws and regulations and ordinances. 5.1 gets into, they've got to follow fire codes, all the things, but the biggie here is their daily hours of operation would be no earlier than 9 a.m. and no later than 7 p.m. Monday through Sunday, so 7 days a week. The idea was we didn't want them staying open late at night on a Friday night and, you know, not coming, you know, the hours of a strip club. On-site production and consuming prohibited. So you can't grow on the same site you dispense, and you don't consume or do product tasting on the site. So they cannot stand out on the corner, you know, in front of the bench, in front of the place, smoking what they just bought. Odors and disposal, that is where we've talked about making sure there's some filtration system. If people start complaining, you get into a strip mall, which I know that we'll have most likely, if this is approved, we'll end up, you know, in strip malls. Well, there's a restaurant next door, and we don't want to be, have them, you know, being irritated by smells that they don't like. And so, and we've checked with some folks, and they said that's been done in other cities. It's not a big problem for putting a little filter on. Is everyone following this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Location. And Bill, if you want to go up that map that you got there that we had done by the county, and unfortunately we didn't get it to where we could stick it up there. But the state of Oregon, some of these are a mixture of state law and the local law. They require 1,000 feet of a public or private elementary school. So you will see here, I'll just run through it, then you can show them, Bill. We did 750 feet. Of a public library, so you go down to the corner of First and Huntington where the Deschutes County Library is, you'll be 750 feet from that in a circle. Then you're 1,000 feet from all the schools. Now the schools run, you know, a long, long block. So basically you can think, come 1,000 feet from the grade school, and that encompasses all the park property because it's right next to it. They butt up, and then you go clear down to the high school. If you go out 1,000 feet, you go over the top of where the future skate park will be. It basically takes you out to Huntington Road. And in some cases, it overlaps, and you'll see there, it actually goes over the senior center, all that area, and then it takes you up to basically the west side of 97, by and large, is would not be eligible. The east side of Highway 97 would be eligible for a dispensary. And now, you can look at the map.
All this green area, zone traditional commercial, as Rick said, along 97 mostly, 4th Street to the east, that's eligible for dispensary locations. And then this second area up here is Wickia, and this whole area on the east side of the highway. Those are the areas that would be eligible for dispensaries.
He's got Roslyn School up there, and they've got 1,000 feet around it, which there's no commercial out there, so it's not eligible anyway. And so then dispensaries by state law have to be 1,000 feet from each other. So while 97 on the east side is eligible, you can't have them too close. And so that in itself is somewhat limiting, you know, because you can't shove two of them in a mall. And it appears to me that you could have three, you know, that 1,000 foot thing kind of maybe. If you look at the available buildings, you know, there's no buildings by McDonald's. You know, and you really hit the first strip mall where the Radio Shack is. Once you put one there, you got to go 1,000 feet this way. And then if you get to the next strip mall where the Mexican restaurant is, then you got to come out of the 1,000 feet down here, and you kind of run out of buildings that are probably suitable. So, I mean, that's kind of, because I've had lots of calls, and that's the, one of the troubles that people looking at this run into is the location limits pretty significantly. Not to mention business will limit. I mean, there's, if you allow 10 of them, I don't think 10 of them are going to stay in business. So there's a bit of a gold rush on, a feeding frenzy. I mean, yeah. Half the calls we get right now are just today. We were just, got off right before Jeremy called us. And, I mean, it was a guy on marijuana. So it just keeps going. But that will all shake out, and these people will settle out. There is not enough business for them all. There are going to be some hurt feelings out there. Okay, 5.4. Marijuana club, they cannot be located on the same property or within the same building of a marijuana smoking club. We don't.
What
no, well, we don't know. There isn't one.
But there's no definition for it either.
No, but there may be in state law.
I mean, I just saw that
oh.
You had definitions for everything else, but there's you didn't have a definition for a marijuana club.
Yeah, I don't know what one is.
Should
we can check on that. We can have one with us. No, we can have Jeremy add that as a definition. So again, so you saw the 750, the 1,000 feet from libraries and schools, and then 1,000 feet from each other. Edibles. One of the things edibles are one of the areas that people are concerned about, and that'll come up with recreational too. What is we are requiring the warning label. Keep out of reach of children, and it has to be in bold capital letters in a font larger than the label type size. In other words, you don't kind of, you know, like when you watch a drug ad on TV, they go real fast and it's real small, tells you all the things it'll cause. Here, this has to be bigger than anything else on the label. Obviously, people know to keep it out of reach of children. Those who aren't probably aren't going to read the label anyway. Minors. No minors are allowed in a dispensary unless they are have a card and they have to be with an adult. So they can't, you know, in other words, you can't bring in your kids with you. A minor is defined as 18. The counting system, so if you look at 5.7 and 5.8, that's all because we have a tax. That's just all the accounting requirements that we can go in and audit. And because there's such a cash business, you know, you have to have a lot of checks and balances so that we can audit them. A motel, 90% of the business plus is credit cards. You just get credit card receipts. You pretty well know how much business is at the motel. In a dispensary, none or very little, although that will cure over time because they'll get to where they're doing more credit cards. That'll all work out. But right now, it's fairly a cash business. So it's pretty easy to slip it in your pocket. Mm-hmm. But under these rules, you know, that you have marijuana coming in, and it's all recorded, the state keeps track. Well, if you have, you know, 100 ounces come in, and you show sales of 10 going out, and there's only 10 on the shelf, 80 of it went somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so people will figure that all out. I mean, you know.
Hey, Rick, what's the result of, like, somebody not keeping their books up?
I believe that's in...
What does the state do?
The infractions under item 7, comply with any provisions of the ordinance, fine $500. Now, if they don't keep track of what the state requires them to keep good track, and so they have their own fines, we're kind of depending on, you know, the state will regulate these industries. It's really a state-regulated.
Could we put some language in there that second infraction closes their doors? You know, I mean, they get caught once and they don't learn, and they keep doing it.
Well, it does.
Because they're just robbing. They're robbing the taxpayers of the town. They're by not paying their taxes, right?
Well, one thing is that they can be a fine not to exceed $500, and that actually, there could be a rule on that we can't go do more. Okay. City will be entitled to collect from any PRF violating or otherwise failing to comply. Reasonable attorney fees, well, that'll cost them plenty at $200 an hour. Mm-hmm. And other fees, costs, and expenses incurred by the city to enforce it. So if we have to go after these folks, they're playing games with us, we'll be in short order. Right. We're not going to play a game in La Pine.
Okay.
if that's what you would like.
And each day is a separate offense.
Well, I know that you know the TRT funds, they don't come in on time. Yeah, we take care of business too. So
yeah, exactly.
You know.
No,
we want to make sure that's in the language so everyone understands.
Then the other thing is, if you look down, they actually pursued some criminal charges. But I think that the if they're misreporting their sales, the state's going to get them, because the state keeps track of what goes in and what goes out.
Okay.
So back here in 5.7,
yep,
where it's talking about accounting systems and records,
mm-hmm,
we have a definition of manager, and it's not talking about the state. If the manager finds that the PRF's books and records are deficient in any way, I'll let you read the rest of that.
Right.
Not, you know, must modify the dispensary account system to meet the requirements of the manager.
Right.
Or what?
Well, but it goes on. Then you go on to the, if you don't do that, that's then if you're in violation. In other words, if you don't meet our requirements, you go to 7, you're now violating our ordinance. The manager is the city manager.
Right, no, I understand that, but I'm saying this whole paragraph here, they have to meet the requirements of the city manager.
Right.
Okay.
And then if you, number 7, you only put the penalties in one place. You don't put it in every paragraph. Number 7 tells you what happens.
Violations, infractions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, of any provision of the ordinance. So if you violate a provision of this ordinance, you then come here, and then that's the penalty.
To enforce it. All right.
And then also the last sentence, as you can see, that it doesn't preclude any criminal charges under state or city ordinances. So.
I guess I'm hung up here on the fact that if the city manager finds that the records and bookkeeping is deficient in any way, they'll have to modify them, mm-hmm, to meet the requirements of the manager.
Yep.
But at what point does the manager say, well, that's in violation? And we go to item 7, and now we're holding them accountable under item 7.
I'm comfortable with it, and I couldn't explain all that. I mean, this is, I think, pretty standard. But I think that the reality is, you're going to go, it's what it's saying is, we can go in. If we don't like how they're giving us their records, we can say we want you to provide X, and they need to provide X. If they're not, if we feel there's anything going on, we can get the state records. And if we start to think that anything in here that's not being followed, you know, we will be able to go after them. And I can ask Jeremy if you want more language or other.
For instance, let's say you feel there's something going on. You ask for the records, they refuse to.
Well, then they're in violation.
Could you hold their business license at that point?
Well, then it goes to this, that they pay $500, like he said, you can actually fine them a day. They're not going to stay in business long.
Per day?
Yeah. And
okay. It didn't say that, does it, in 7? I think it just says $500, not to exceed $500.
Each day.
Each day.
Each day in violation.
Okay.
That's normal. That's true with all our ordinances.
I guess.
Each day.
It's the 1, 2, 3, 4th row down in 7.
Okay.
Each day, last 3 years.
Okay.
Last
three. Right.
I guess my thought, Rick, is that they're being required to meet the requirements of the manager. There's a loophole in there when it gets to item 7 because there's no connection to that being, if they don't meet the requirements of the manager, there's no connection to that being a violation. I'd just like to see something in there.
I'm not going to give legal advice on that, so I'll just ask Jeremy.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Just go to Jeremy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's no problem.
Will the city manager set out something like these are some kind of a document saying, records on demand, that type of thing, or is it just assumed in this?
I think that you're going to have to let this play out.
Okay.
You cannot, this isn't going on anywhere yet.
It's a basic.
So okay. It's really hard to, I mean, I think Jeremy Green is the most anal, perfect wording of everything in the world when it comes to detail. And I've worked with him for years privately and here, so I think that you are well covered, and we will find that out. And one thing about it, we can always amend if we had to, you know. And again, these dispensaries, if there's going to be just a couple of them in town, the last thing they want is to have us on, because life will be miserable.
And I guess on that, what it does, if I was back in English class, it would say manager requirements. What are those requirements? So,
yeah. An explanation of what the manager's.
And I think he can go to Jeremy and
go to Jeremy and
let Jeremy go around.
Sounds good.
I'm
not so much, you know, worried that what we might understand, but the shop owner might have a loophole, like Ken said. Well, I didn't know what the city manager expected of it.
Well, what we expect is pretty basic, and a couple of them in the room here plan on doing them. We get 5% of a retail sale. If they sell $100 today, $5 came to us.
Right.
If they sell $200 today, $10 comes to us. And I don't think it needs to be that complicated for these people.
Okay.
And if they make it complicated, then we will be visiting. You know, really. And I'm looking right at you guys. It's that basic. This isn't too complicated. And if they start trying to play games with us, the state keeps track of what's coming in and what's going out. So we know how many ounces are going out. And so they keep, you know, can they cheat a few joints? Yeah. But are they going to be able to do it in significant volume? No. So, if the state says they sold X amount, we can multiply it by the going rate and figure out what they should about be giving us. And if they're not doing it, I mean, I'm comfortable with it. This is a work in progress. There isn't a city in Oregon that's had to mess with this yet. Really, May 1st is when we all start. And, you know, I can't answer them all.
I personally find that this item 5-7 is in relationship to it being such a cash basis. That it really speaks to the issue that, you know, in so many businesses out there where this is done, and I'll speak to a friend of mine that had a business, and he called it PIP, put in pocket, and there isn't a business out there, that there isn't a corner, that you can't find some PIP. But item 5-7 is really speaking to bookkeeping in a way around a cash business that will help us manage all of this in the tax arena and keep all of us happy. And then
it says if their accounting system is so half scattered that we can't audit it, then they have to change their accounting system. Yeah. If they don't change their accounting system, then they're in violation.
Yeah, because Rick, I don't think the discrepancies are ever going to show up in the state recorded purchases of marijuana for their store. I think the stuff that comes in the back door unreported is where you're going to have discrepancies. Yeah, and without checks and balances on that, how do we know what's going on? And
if someone's going to bring it in the back door and sell it out the side door, that's going to be, I mean, that's a criminal violation for them.
Criminal.
I mean, they could go to jail. So, when we're not audited, I can't answer what is.
There's no language speaking to that.
Well, no, they can't do it. It's against state law.
Right.
They cannot bring in their buddy's stuff in the back door and then sell it, like I call the side door.
It just doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of checks and balances.
Because the state of Oregon, that's against state law.
Right. They didn't build that into the...
Well, no, because the number two or number four says, or five, you have to follow all state laws. Mm-hmm. The state laws have pages.
Right.
You know, we're not reduplicating the state laws in here. These are ones, that's why we reference all state law. And then we are doing our own hours of operation, things like that. Those are good questions, and we'll work with these guys, and I think it should work out.
Could we request an audit? If we felt so, and if so, who would pay for that?
I believe it says in here.
I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it says they've got to make it to where we can audit. Well, we're going to pay for audits. I mean, okay. We don't go to the motels and make them pay for an audit.
If we request one, we would pay.
Yeah.
Okay. I will have a question on 5-4, but I know you're trying to get through the whole document.
Well, I think it's reasonable that we go through it as we go through.
Okay.
What's on 5-4?
5-4, marijuana clubs and locations.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's probably way out there, hopefully for a while, but then that brings in the whole complex things of alcohol, marijuana, other drugs being used within that club.
We need to find out what the definition of a marijuana club is. You can't smoke in a bar now anyway, and you can't smoke in public marijuana. So you're not going to go to a bar. You can't go down to a Pine Inn and light up a joint.
No, it would be a specific club.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. I don't know what that's defined as.
Okay. I just get reports out of Colorado that it's...
I'm sure that when you take public testimony, there's some people in the audience that will explain what a marijuana is.
Oh, I know.
Maybe.
I've got a question, Rick. We come up to 5-4, from 2-3 to 4, and it starts talking about the dispensary must not be located on the same property. But the title of it is Marijuana Club.
Yeah.
Slash location. It's addressing two issues. It talks about clubs and then just the general location of the dispensary.
So it would help to say a dispensary may not be located on the same property within the club, I think, if it defined the club in there.
I see it as one subject. I mean, you've got a label as a marijuana club, but in the whole paragraph, you're talking about a dispensary. A club is
not a dispensary. The first sentence is, the dispensary must not, because I'm assuming, cannot be located within the same building of a marijuana club. So they're just telling the dispensary can't be in the same building as a marijuana club or a smoking club.
Okay.
Then, period. Then it goes on to say a dispensary must not be located at the same address as a marijuana grow site. Okay, that's another fact. You can't be by a grow site. Then it's saying you can't be by a school, you can't be... It's kind of going down a list of all the things you can't be by.
Okay.
I personally would like to see some work done on that title in the paragraph to make it a little plainer.
Okay. It's mostly about location, and marijuana clubs is just kind of thrown in there, so maybe we'll address it that way.
We can take marijuana clubs off.
Sure. Okay.
Okay.
You pass the record keeping.
Oxygen available.
All transfers need to happen inside the dispensary. So in other words, the product comes in, and if that's where they sell. In other words, they can't go outside. You can't have a walk up. There's no drive ups. You can't pull up in your car and roll down your window like you can at McDonald's or a bank. But you can some pharmacies, they have drive-ups, but they're not allowed in this. And no mobile dispensaries, you can't drive around to people's houses and deliver medicine from a marijuana dispensary. The release and identification, that's just the legal stuff that Jerry
Rick,
put in.
Did we turn different pages because there's packaging of edibles and did I sleep over here?
Well, we talked about edibles, and we were down talking about accounting systems. We talked about minors, and we got into the record keeping, and then we jumped to sales and transfers. Is there anyone I missed in?
No, go ahead.
Okay. We did the violations, and then a public nuisance declared. So if the operation of any dispensary within the city limits is in violation of this ordinance, it's declared a public nuisance and will be abated pursuant to all available remedies. And if you declare a public nuisance, they have lots of powers over you. So it's saying if If it's, you know, is in violation of this ordinance, it's hereby declared a public nuisance. I mean, you can shut down a public nuisance. Mm-hmm. Like I say, Jeremy's got it there pretty well figured out. Mm-hmm. confidentiality, and this is kind of saying, hey, you know, other than the things that may be through HIPAA, and I don't know if they follow HIPAA laws or not, but basically, a lot of the things that we audit and things, those are public information, but there's something that is protected, you know, we would obviously protect it. But there are some things that are required by law to be protected. But also, we have the public open access type law. People can do public records requests. So this is kind of addressing that. So it talks about, you know, disclosing general statistics. You know, that kind of stuff is not going to be protected in this document. The names of the owners of these businesses, the financiers, whoever financed them, those are not protected. And so the theory is you want to know who is financing these people. And then the examination of books, records, and premises, and this might help some of the stuff we were just talking about before. To determine compliance with requirements of all the things, all land use, development, building, and fire codes, all other federal, state, local laws, regulations, and ordinances, including without limitation, those directly or indirectly relating to medical marijuana, including the payment of all fines, fees, and taxes owing to the city. The city manager may examine or cause to be examined by an agent or representative designated, that's where we could hire someone, at any reasonable time, the premises of the dispensary, including wastewater from the dispensary. You want to know if they're doing something, and they should. You can check what's coming out of the place, including books, papers, payroll reports, state and federal income tax returns. They are required to furnish to the manager the means, facilities, and opportunity to making such examinations, investigations. The bottom line is that they have to turn stuff over.
Yeah.
And if they don't, they're in violation of the ordinance.
Yeah.
Then if they're in violation of the ordinance, they can be declared a public nuisance.
That really clarifies my concerns with what the manager rights were and requirements. So that kind of encompasses both of those in a way.
I mean, yeah, just what the manager is looking forward to.
Yes.
This is going to be interesting. So 11, that's the legal thing. So if part of this or if one sentence is struck down or something, the rest of it still stays. If there's some, you know, somebody has a typo, it's that kind of thing. It covers it. Sometimes someone will say, oh, you misspelled a word here, so the ordinance is a book. That doesn't work. And then an emergency is declared. The reason we have to do the emergency is because of the timing issue. When you get this in April, in order for it to be ready for May, we have to declare an emergency. If we don't declare an emergency, it needs 30 days. So say if on the, what's our April meeting?
22nd.
April meeting.
No, the
8th. 30 days to that's into May. So then they have that week with none of these rules would be in place. So we'll have to declare an emergency. Now, if under the emergency clause, it has to be unanimous council. Well, if one person voted no, the emergency isn't declared. You have to wait 30 days on May 1st. There's no requirements. So that's the conundrum that you shall be in. Because the state of Oregon said you can sell medical marijuana in this state, and you have 1 year to deal with this. Yeah, is that, let him talk about the Planning Commission also helped.
Just for a second, because I know people are getting ready to talk, but this is the time, place, and materials ordinance. We're also going to have to amend the city zoning ordinance to include definitions of what a dispensary is, to list it in certain zones that it's on the map here, and generally to say what the standards are in the land use setting. So those two hearings will be coming up on April 15th before the Planning Commission, and April 22nd before city council. Just FYI.
Well, yeah, so it really gets confusing. That they're going to work on, they're also going to amend the planning zoning codes. Most cities are doing it, not all. Some have just done this by ordinance. Others feel that you need both the ordinance and then change some wording in the zoning codes. So to reflect kind of what we're doing with the ordinance. And that's the first thing planners all said is, well, what if we fix it in an ordinance? What about our zoning code? And I think the prudent thing to do is do both. So it'll actually say, it'll actually have a section on
medical marijuana dispensaries.
It'll actually have a...
And where they can be located will be specifically referenced in the zoning ordinance.
And all this, there's never been any mention of like distances from churches. You're going to have pushback from the churches having a dispensary right next door, don't you think?
Dude, I mean, there's churches everywhere, so...
Well, you, I mean...
We haven't had any comments from churches, but I think it goes back to what Jeremy said. If you did that, you basically have banned them everywhere, and then that makes you subject to... You know, I mean, liquor stores can go next to churches. I've not heard that. I've not read that. I've heard them in city. I mean, I went to Prangville and sat in their hearings. I had dinner with the Redmond city manager and talked about this, and churches have never come up.
Okay.
Because then you get into the definition of a church. You know, all of that. Worship, house of worship, mm-hmm. How many people is that? You know, so. When we're trying to make something that's workable, I mean, that's one thing I think you realize that, you know, I need to get ourselves caught up, as and rightfully so, it's that also has to be workable. Because if you make it too tricky and too things, then that causes trouble, and we spend a lot of time with legal fees and things. And so I think all parties needed to be fairly black and white. So anyway, that's...
Are the days and the time that they are open negotiable, or are they cement?
So this is the recommendation of the Planning Commission and staff, was 9 to 7. Tonight, you need to tell me if you want it closing at 6, open at 10. It's negotiable.
Hours aren't that important to me, but we don't let the liquor store be open on Sunday.
Yeah, they are open on Sunday.
I mean, just a question. Are they?
Liquor stores are open on Sundays.
They're open on Sundays.
Pharmacies are open on Sundays.
Pharmacies are open.
That was the thinking of the Planning Commission.
We asked them that question directly. If they wanted light clothes on Sunday, it was unanimous. No.
Any further, Karen? Anything else? Kathy? Any questions of staff, because we're going to public comment soon?
No.
Okay.
I guess it doesn't matter.
I have just one question. Why was a library singled out for 750 feet?
Oh, because it was in place of doing parks. Because it basically covered the park. You know, by doing the parks, it covers. If you notice, the whole park is covered.
Yeah.
And then you're getting into the triangles. You have little parks everywhere. And so, because we could have said that park, but that's the.
But I'm really talking about the library. We got specifically in here within 700 feet of the real property comprising a public library.
Right. Because our goal was. When people are banning, in other words, if you're truly using it for why you have the distances, it's to keep it away from kids. Okay, kids play in the park down there with the skate park and all of it. By doing the library, it covered that entire area. Kids don't play at the flagpole, but it's a park.
I realize that, but I'm just talking about it as a public library,
right,
has a 750 feet instead of 1,000.
Oh, you
I mean, we're not talking about a library, we're talking about a park. We're talking about a library.
Right.
Regardless of where the parks are or whatever. We're saying that the library is only getting 750 feet when everybody else has got 1,000 feet. I just asked, how did the library get singled out to have less space?
Because the goal was to keep it, the goal was to not have it cover over the top of the park. If we said parks, every piece of park would be covered. So the 750 met our goal. See, you could have done 1,500 feet if that's what you needed to do to cover the park. 750 covered the park.
And I'm just thinking about going out the other direction, east, you know.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, if it was 1,000 feet,
mm-hmm,
going east of the public, of the library, would extend it further out to the east.
Well, you'd be in this drop-off out here.
No, I'm east. Talking about going east.
Oh, east. Oh, you'd be across 97.
Yes. Yes.
Right, well, if you want that, but that's getting into, if you're wanting to ban, then just ban it, because that's where all of the malls are. See, once you cross 97, I mean, the Planning Commission, and they were never trying to ban these. I mean, you have to decide whether you're banning these, as that's what Jeremy's been trying to say. Time, place, and manner is to put reasonable restrictions, but allows them to function and open. This isn't, if you want to ban them, you don't want any of this.
I think that's your answer.
So this was not...
satisfies me.
Yeah, this wasn't written to... So we said is you don't want it by schools, you don't want it next to the skate park, so that's what this does. It doesn't then say, well, why don't you go out further so that you could, because that's what you heard, that's then, you open yourself up. There are some cities that are saying, oh no, we're not going to ban them, and they have wrote so many distances in, the effect is a ban.
I think what I heard, and it's reasonable, that 750 feet allows it to go into an industrial, or into a place where there are premises for it to be in.
Correct. And
by if it is 1,000, then you would actually lock out. So that was
yes.
That's why it becomes 750 feet. That right. was my question.
Yes.
Okay. Anything before we go to public comment?
No.
Hearing none? Anything else, staff?
Nope.
Okay. At this point in time, we will open the discussion to public comment.
May I?
Yes.
Thank you. I know, hit the red button.
Name and address.
I'm Gary Gordon, and I live in Lowell Way, Lapine. I also have a city business license. I don't want to be accused of being more anal than the other person who was referred to, but as I was going through this, I came up with a hypothetical, which could be a real situation that doesn't appear to be addressed. And that is, it's basically two questions here. First off, supposing a private or career school decides to open within 1,000 feet of an established dispensary, will that force a revocation of the dispensary license? Second, other side of the coin is this. Can a dispensary prevent the opening of a private school within 1,000 feet because it has a business license? In other words, does it have bumping rights to someone who wants to apply for a private school? So those are something I think you just kind of need to look at, and I don't know, you know, if I'm being way, way too out there, but the concept of bumping rights once the person has the business license, I think maybe need to be addressed.
I think it's a good question.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I think we'll probably want to chat with Jeremy on that, but I know that other cities have talked about that very thing. What comes first, the chicken or the egg kind of thing, and so yes, is that going to trigger somebody not being able to locate next to the dispensary, let's say, as you've cited in the example? So we'll have to talk with Jeremy about
that. All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And by the way, for the record, his name is?
Gary Gordon.
Okay.
How you guys doing today?
Okay.
Right on. Got a couple documents. This is my dispensary license that I filed for, and a floor plan. Oops, sorry. For you, for all of you. I would have made more copies. I just didn't have time. I've been pretty busy.
I'll let you start it. Look at that.
So I just wanted to present that today and basically ask if you guys had any questions for me. I applied over here in the strip mall for Lupine Square.
Would you, for the record, give your name and
name your business?
Name your business?
Yes. It'll be called Green Knots Dispensary. My name is Randy Huff.
Do you live in the city, Randy?
Yes. Actually, just moved back, so.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Problem. For the record, the MMD number on the top is actually confidential to the city or me. I don't, obviously don't have a problem with the city whatsoever reviewing it. And the floor plan I presented is just for the city to kind of add any requirements that they would like within the facility or the premises, like a filtration system or a vent fan, something like that. Obviously, fire extinguishers up to the fire department standards.
State records?
Yes.
Okay.
For the most part, from what the discussion of the ordinances, a lot of it is, how I'd say, redundant. It's great to have it in here for the city's purposes, but the state does cover a ton of things. They're very strict. If you slip up, they're going to have you. They'll shut your facility down, and you'll have basically a grace period of 2 weeks to comply to the faults that were made before you can open back up, basically.
Any other input while they're taking a look at that? You'd like to speak to?
For the most part, I'm okay with any questions. I just was wondering if the city had any more questions for me.
How do you feel about the ordinance?
I feel great about it. I think it's great. One thing that came up earlier is the record keeping. I think you should possibly put in this ordinance that you have to have a certified bookkeeping person to make sure all the records are kept so there isn't any scamming going on or any inconsistencies in the records. That way we're all on the same page with no one getting robbed or any audits having to be presented because we already have the records, type of thing. So maybe a certified bookkeeper. Other than that, I think the ordinance is great. It's perfect, really. Good to have some great compliance with it. So.
Okay.
And that's it. If I can, I'm going to get out of here. I got to go.
There you go.
All right, guys.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Did you want this the city manager to have this?
I'd like the floor plan back if I could. I can make copies for you guys, obviously.
Okay.
Like,
just
yes, yeah.
Go ahead and take it.
Okay.
It's safe.
Okay. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Good night.
Have a good night.
Further public comment? Please.
My name is Mike Boynton. I'm a citizen here in Lapine. I own Central Organics, LLC. And I just had a small question, and it was about the times of operations. I know some clubs in Bend, they open at 7 a.m., and I don't know that you guys would be willing to maybe incorporate that into the ordinance just to give us a little bit longer business hours to tailor to some of the people who do get up early or perhaps work a graveyard shift at Gordy's or something and would like to acquire their medicine before they go home and go to bed and not have to wait until 9 o'clock for it to open. And that was the only thing that I had.
Okay.
And so.
We'll get into deliberations here in a little bit.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Further public comment?
Yes, please. I'm Doug Watt. We own a couple of businesses here in town and have for 23 some years. I mainly am interested in providing this open letter to the council. I compliment the city and the council on, I think, a pretty progressive approach to this thing at this point. And I don't want to take up a bunch of your extra time this time. Rick, I'm going to be coming to talk to you about a couple of things, but we are also have an offer pending. We're probably going to accept it tomorrow. They've countered on the Homestead Tavern. So we're going to be buying that. But I have an open letter that I want to provide to everybody here. I have a number of copies.
Do you have enough copies for everyone?
I do. Yeah. And it's just a little story, and I want you guys, I hope, and I think you already pretty much be on the same page with this, but I appreciate your taking a chance to look at it. And I won't take up a lot of time of your day, but we've been here 23 years as productive members of this community, and I think you guys are about ready to take the right approach to this. And I'll let you read that on your own.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Where did you say you had an offer on a building?
The building out there that everybody wants to burn. You're not going to burn that, are you?
Nope. Not going to burn it.
Thank you. It's still an open public hearing, and is there further comments?
Just I'll throw something out there. My name's Matt Topher. I got a business here in Lapine. Really, I just want to know how come number 6 wasn't addressed.
Probably skipped it for us.
That was the big thing. Don't really have a question besides that.
Okay, well, we'll...
Yeah, let's address that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Staff?
On that question? Yeah, this is basically we are going to require that they sign a release that it makes it more difficult for someone that they, you know, this is such a litigious, everyone wants to go after everyone. Mm-hmm. So this is basically each dispensary or dispensary owner would waive and release the city as officers, employees, volunteers, they go through all the normal groups of folks. Mm-hmm. From any injuries or damages of any kind that result from any arrest or prosecution of the dispensary owners. So it's and the reason for that is that because it is against federal law, technically, as we've discussed many times, medical marijuana dispensaries are still listed as class one narcotic by the federal government. Now the federal government, as we know, voted that they are not going to enforce or will allow, they're not even allowed to spend a dollar enforcing it.
In this budget?
Yeah, but that'll just redo it. I mean, because you only do a budget once a year. So they've not enforced on any of the, there's 20 some states that have. There's no one being arrested, they aren't going to any state and you know. So what Jeremy just said is because we don't want someone to say, oh, you permitted a business that breaks federal law. The fact that they won't force it, it's still against federal law. So we're saying, if you want to open up a business, if you want to open a business that violates federal law, we're just saying, you know, it's a disclaimer that we're going to have signed. And that's, if they don't want to do that, then they won't open in Lapine. Because they have to follow this. So whether or not it would, I mean, if someone sued someone, mm-hmm. Anyway, who knows where that will all end up.
For
Okay.
That's a Jeremy paragraph. I asked about it when it first came out, and I kind of said, what is this? And that's the answer that I got.
Okay.
Any comments still?
If you want to speak again, yes.
I just wanted to say the very first thing that I put on that open letter refers to the March 10th, the Compassion Access Research Expansion and Respect States National Senate Bill was introduced by Senators Rand Paul, Cory Booker, and Kirsten Gillibrand. And that's going to make huge changes to the federal aspect of this even further, even though they had made it a comments about it, basically Holder had done that, about what they were going to do. This makes it official. And also allows banks to accept money. Too, which is going to solve a huge problem in this cash industry.
Yeah, it'll become credit cards as soon as they can. Debit cards.
Thank you, Doug. No. Okay. Is there any further comment in the public hearing? Hearing none, I will close the public hearing. And if we're up to council discussion, any further comments to a direction to the staff? Because they're going to take our comments and what we've already made comments about and go off and work with Jeremy and bring the ordinance back. When will that be?
We'll get it back in a week or two. Then I think we'll probably do an 8th April meeting is when we will hold our hearing.
On the 8th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we have to notice it 7 to 8 days ahead and all that stuff.
Bill, I heard you say something about the latter part of April. What was that about?
Yeah, that's when the zoning ordinance amendment will come before you.
Okay.
On April 22nd. It'll get to the Planning Commission on April 15th.
So we'll start our normal work session with a, because we can't vote in a work session, so that's our normal work session.
Yeah, no, it's going to come. Will be at the hearing on the 8th, April 8th.
For this Planning Commission?
Oh, the Planning Commission.
Yeah.
Oh, there's, well, we may have to have a special meeting.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. We're going to see a special meeting in front of our planning meeting.
Oh, I didn't know. I was told that those were the dates. April 15th for the Planning Commission. Is that not correct? Or?
Yeah, it is. Oh. Planning Commission.
Okay. That's and in April 22nd for the council.
So we'll just come back on the 22nd. What we'll have to do is have a to adopt what the Planning Commission comes up.
And that's all I was pointing out.
So we have everything.
We wouldn't normally have a meeting on that day.
Oh, I see. It's a special.
It's a planning session.
All right.
You're right.
Okay. I
understand.
Okay. I think. Well, what we're going to go to that next. But what I'm saying is, do you have any further comments that you want to give to staff as they take this away and work on the comments we've already made? We had a comment made about the 7 in the public hearing opening 7 instead of 9.
I am not in favor of that.
The pharmacy's not open till 9.
Okay. Karen, any comments around that?
No.
Okay. So, general consensus is that we'll leave it at 9 o'clock? Okay. So we'll move on to item number 10. Appointment of budget committee members. And we have one listed on the agenda. And there is another one that has been brought forth that we will deal with this evening. And I think you all have copies of that and had an opportunity to read that. And let's see, Dennis is in the audience at this time. So does council want to ask any questions of Dennis? Or anything like that, or you okay? Is there a motion to appoint Dennis Scott to the Budget Committee as a Budget Committee member?
So moved.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Yep.
No opposition. It's approved unanimously. And Dennis Scott is now on the Budget Committee.
Congratulations.
So you can leave all your personal information so they'll know where to send the checks.
There you go.
We have another person who has applied for the Budget Committee, Connie Doreen Breese, and I will speak for her in the fact that tonight is she is involved with a youth group at her church, at Crescent Creek Church, and was unable to attend this evening. You've all read her her application, and are there any comments?
No, I'm glad she brought this forward, even though she's not here.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve Connie Breese to the Budget Committee?
So moved.
Seconded.
It's moved and seconded. Any discussion further? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimous. We now have a full Budget Committee, if I'm not mistaken.
Pretty much, I think so.
Yeah, okay. And we will now go to item 11, appointment of Public Works Committee members. You see listed Linda Johnson, Russ Smith, Tom Weller, and Jen Fleming. They have been on the Public Works Committee for quite some time. They've done outstanding work, and I would entertain a motion to go ahead with the Public Works Committee's recommendation that they be reappointed, and ask for a motion to reappoint them.
I so move. Second.
Moved and seconded. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And it's unanimous that you are now back at work. Mr. Fleming.
Yes.
Okay. Item number 12 is appointment of budget officer for 2015-2016. Our city manager will act as our budget officer, and is there a motion to appoint the city manager, Rick Allen, as the budget officer?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimous that we now have a budget officer.
Yay.
Item 13 is the 765 acres of city land to be classified as forest land and protected from fire by the Oregon Department of Forestry. Comments, Rick?
Yeah, that's our new land out here. So we are going to, they classify that as forest land and they're going to protect it. So it will, otherwise wouldn't have any fire protection because it was outside of the, well, first of all, it's outside of the boundaries of the Clopine Fire District.
Right.
And they only protect structures in forested land, basically like that.
There's nothing.
No, and as you see, it was federal. So the federal, like, you know, the federal government would have went in and bought it. And the problem is you got 700 acres, which you can get a bonfire started out there. You could have a 200 acre fire rolling into town. And technically, no one would have to fight it. They would. They could say it's unprotected. So we enter into, I called State Forestry. It's going to cost us a couple grand a year. They have an assessment per acre based on the fire season before.
Right.
And they said they would take it, but they require it be designated like this. So we, they're going to protect it for us. That means State Forest, you bring on the retardant planes and their crews and do whatever, treat it like any other land.
What do you have to do anything to turn it into forest land, or is that already forest land?
I just vote. I think, I'm not sure. Just vote that you support that,
okay.
You know,
okay.
And being protected by the Oregon Department of Forestry. And so then they'll send us a bill and we'll put it in our budget for next year.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve having the forest land protected by the fire department of the state of Oregon?
The Oregon Department of Forestry.
Oregon Department of Forestry. Motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? It's unanimous. We come to other matters. how quickly we get to the end.
Yes, we're going pretty good.
There are none, and therefore we'll open it for public comment again. Any comment? Hearing none? We'll go to staff comments.
No, we've been busy.
Okay.
Sure.
Council comments. Greg, anything? Conrad? Okay. Karen?
No.
Okay. Debbie?
Nope.
All right. And I'm not going to hold up the wagon, so. I will make a comment about the If I Were Mayor's program. Of course, we have that going again this year. The day that the contest for If I Was Mayor in the school system will be 17th of April, and we'll bring all those posters and resumes and videos and et cetera to the council members for judging. And we'll, at the May 8th meeting, we will have the winners here at City Hall for presentation of their the first person in poster, essay, and video will win $100 from the city for participation. And those will be forwarded to the state for competition in the state level, where the winners there are presented with iPad Airs. So it's quite a program. And with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Adjourn.
I forgot to say that.